Speaking of liberty, the National Broadcasting Company presents another in a special series of programs under the auspices of the Council for Democracy. There was free talk in the old New England town hall and around the Cracker Barrel in the Crossroads store. And there's free talk by free men every week at this time, led by our host, Rex Stout. You may already know Rex Stout as the author of intriguing detective stories featuring the master criminologist, Nero Wolfe. On this program, you'll get to know him even better as an outspoken champion of our American democracy. Mr. Stout.
Thank you, Reginald Stoneborough. Good evening, friends of liberty. The majority of us Americans inherited our share in this land of liberty, not a share of its acres, which many of us do not possess and do not covet, but a share in its history, its successes and failures, its glories and shames, its freedoms and ideals and aspirations. That share was ours at birth. I'm not saying that even the most precocious of us was immediately aware of it. Even the smartest American baby does not, as soon as its back has been slapped by the nurse or midwife or doctor or grandmother, cry out lustily, "Give me liberty or give me death." But from that moment, it does in fact own its share in American liberty, though not yet its share of the common and universal obligation to maintain it and extend it. That comes later. Our guest this evening, Louis Adamick, was not one of those babies. Louis Adamick did not inherit his share, he bought it, and has certainly paid for it. Born in Blato, Yugoslavia, now a Nazi province, someday, and not a distant day, we hope, to be Yugoslavia again. Born in Blato in 1899, he came to America in 1913. He was in the United States Army in the World War, becoming a citizen in 1918. He has written several books, among them The Native's Return and From Many Lands, which are a part of the American literary and spiritual treasure to be inherited by our children. He is the editor of the new magazine, Common Ground. Nor does he take any part of his America for granted or by hearsay. In the past 10 years, he has traveled over 200,000 miles within our vast continental parallelogram. That isn't an exaggeration, is it, Mr. Adamick?
At least that, Mr. Stoud.
And why? Just to look over your property?
Well, I suppose I like the place. I think that I more than like it. Having said this, though, I want to be quick in adding that America to me is not only nor even chiefly a place.
I didn't suppose it was, having read your books. Will you tell us what America is to you?
I'd like to, Mr. Stout. To me, America is not only a place, not only a piece of geography, but an aggregation of people gathered from most of the rest of the world, Europe, Africa, and Asia. America to me is an idea, a way of life, the collection of principles and the conduct of human affairs which happen to appeal to me. America is the new world in which man has a chance to cease being worm and become man. America is also a dream, one of the strongest and grandest ever dreamt.
We spoke about this dream that is America before we went on the air, Mr. Adamick, and you said something to the effect that we, the people of America, need to wake up now, or our American dream is liable to turn into a nightmare.
I did, Mr. Stout. Dreamers must wake up every once in a while, or the dreams are apt to turn into nightmares. The American dream has been too optimistic a thing. I believe that just now we need to wake up, look about, and examine our concepts and aims, and see the dangers and deal with them.
Indeed we do, but go ahead.
Well, twice within the memory of us now living, dreams have had a force strong enough to reshape the world. Just now, it is the dream of personal power built upon terror and tyranny on the part of so-called men of destiny that is dominant. They have a terrific dream. The force of it is tumbling the old world and its culture into ruin. It has men scurrying in fear before it. This dream, to me, is a nightmare, and it is a nightmare to much of the world.
It may work both ways. Maybe our dream is a nightmare to the tyrants and terrorists.
I hope it is. Our dream set in motion the greatest migration in history. It happened only yesterday. It was one of the main factors in making the United States what it is today. Then men did not scurry in fear. They were led by hope. The broad Atlantic became a common high road to the land of promise where people were needed and wanted.
And to begin with, it was a European dream. They brought it across the ocean and naturalized it, and it became the American dream.
Yes, Mr. Stout, we can put it that way if you wish. This American dream may be said to be the sum total of all the hope and aspiration in the people who came here, whether they landed at Jamestown or Plymouth Rock or on Ellis Island. Now it is endangered by the other, by the nightmare, which is reaching over here.
Don't you think we are waking up, Mr. Adamy?
I think we are, but we must not only wake up, but we must unite. There is fairly general agreement on the need of national unity for defense. But what I have in mind, Mr. Stout, is something more than mere unity in order to defend this place, which is called America. Mere defense of geography is not enough. We need a tremendous armaments, of course, and a great navy, an army, and a terrific air force. But equally needful and urgent is the realization that America is an idea, a way of life, perhaps the world's main hope, and that we need to keep it going and enhancing it as such at the same time that we defend the place.
Then we need to awaken twice, once physically and once spiritually.
Well, that's another way of putting it.
And the spiritual alarm clock is the one you were winding up.
Let me put it this way, Mr. Stout. Here we are, 130 million people. About half of these are what I call old-line Americans.
You include Negroes among the old-line Americans?
Yes, I do. There are about 30 million Negroes whose ancestry in this country goes back 200 years or more, whether they are pure Negro or part white.
And the other half are the new stock immigrant groups?
Yes, Mr. Stout. We are a great, great mixture here. We have 8 or 10 million people who are of various Slavic derivations. We have 10 or 15 million German Americans, 5 or 6 million Italian Americans, and 3 or 4 million people who are of Scandinavian backgrounds. We have large numbers of people who came or stem from Greece, Armenia, Syria, Hungary, France, Spain, Romania, and the Far East, mostly Japan, China, and the Philippines. And religiously, we are also a great mixture. We are Protestants, Catholics, Jews, and Mormons, and Buddhists, and so on.
You said a great mixture, Mr. Adamy. It is certainly an all-inclusive mixture. The next few years, even the next few months, will show how great it is.
And it seems to me, Mr. Stout, that we need to remember that this variety is not a disadvantage, but on the contrary, that it is or could be made into a most tremendous advantage. Because of it, we have a chance here to create an extraordinary culture and civilization. I think it is no accident that our most vital cities and regions are those which contain the greatest variety of people.
Now, that is no more an accident than America itself is an accident.
And I would say, Mr. Stout, that it will be important in this connection that we do not try to abolish or suppress this variety. We must not try to melt everybody into a common uniform mold. We should not confuse the ideal of unity with uniformity. These two have nothing in common. Hitler wants uniformity and regimentation. Here we should realize that the democracy and diversity are so closely related that one cannot exist without the other. If you will let me suggest a slogan or motto, I should say, let's make America safe for differences. Or let's have unity within diversity. I'd say let's steer clear of uniformity. That's Hitler's ideal. My guess is that he has no real unity and will never have it over there. The diversity of Europe, which he cannot abolish and turn into uniformity, will overwhelm him.
If patience doesn't topple from her monument before it happens, Mr. Adamy.
Even so, I'd say let Americans be what they are. Out in Los Angeles, for instance, I know a woman who is an immigrant from Poland. A very fine and effective person, and who says that she is a 200% American because she is a 100% Pole. She says that you cannot make a good American out of a poor Pole.
Nor a poor American out of a good Pole?
Quite so. I find that the best, most effective, most useful immigrant Americans are those who do not or did not reject or despise their original backgrounds.
I take it then, Mr. Adamy, that you're not entirely in favor of building as hot a fire as possible under the melting pot.
No, I am not, Mr. Stout. The phrase melting pot suggests changing people with heat or force, which have been used, but with this result, that the best juices and values have been fried and burned out of them.
Then you object, not to Americanization, of course, but to some of the methods used to accomplish it.
That's right. I favor Americanization, only it should be gradual, slow, organic, not forced.
Well, Americanization is designed to produce Americanism. How would you define Americanism?
With a great many people, Americanism is a defensive concept. All too often, all too many Americans have narrowed it down to include only them and their kind. To me, Americanism is nobody's monopoly, but a happy concentrate of some of the best aspirations and tendencies of humanity at its best, nearly everywhere at one time or another. As it seems to me, Americanism is the highest body of idealism in the world today. It is, among other things, a movement away from primitive racism, from fear and nationalism, from herd instincts and herd mentality, and it is a movement toward freedom and creativeness. Americanism is a movement away from uniformity and blind conformity. The Americanism welcomes differences. This is not a new idea. It is an old American idea. Jefferson had it. Whitman once said that the United States was not a nation but a teeming nation of nations, and he was happy about the fact as he saw it. This idea also appealed to Emerson. Once he wrote, "It is the not me in my friend that charms me."
Then would you say that tolerance is the core, the kernel of Americanism?
I'm afraid not, Mr. Stout. I'm afraid that tolerance is not enough. It is no answer to anything. Often, so-called tolerance, as it works out in real life, is nothing else than inactive intolerance, at best a negative virtue. That sort of tolerance is mostly intolerance grown subtle, polite, and beyond reach, where you can get at it and deal with it. It is mostly veneer, to conceal intolerance, a veneer which cracks easily, which has been cracking in recent years in this country under the impact of the depression and the backwash of the mad events in Europe.
Well, when the veneer cracks, what do you do? Paint it over?
Well, too often that's what happens. We need to be trained. We need to train ourselves in the direction of becoming creatively and positively interested in a man, partly because he's different. And because being different, he is apt to have something out of the ordinary to offer to us personally and to contribute to the evolving democracy of America.
Democracy, yes. The Greeks had a word for it. And after more than 2,000 years, we are still fighting for it, and it is more than ever worth fighting for.
That would be my guess, Mr. Stout. We can go ahead in a spirit of bigotry, which is beginning to manifest itself here and there in the United States, or we can go ahead in a spirit of bigness, with an all-inclusive, expanding Americanism, an Americanism big enough to take in all of us, whether our name happens to be Hamilton, or Straczynski, or Giglionis, or Brown, or Smith, or Schmidt, or Kabochnik, or Goldstein, or whether we are white, or colored, or of this or of that religious faith. These are the alternatives. So we will have to choose, you and I, personally, Mr. Stout, and we, all of us, together as a country.
The same old choice. As old as Athens, and as new as the babies being born while we have been talking. My ancestor made it when he crossed the Atlantic over 300 years ago. You made it, Mr. Adamick, when you crossed the same ocean as a boy. The choice to be made by every generation, and every day, and every hour, by every American. Thank you, Mr. Adamick. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest this evening is Louis Adamick. This is Rex Stout saying goodbye until next week.
You've just heard the seventh of a special series of programs entitled Speaking of Liberty, brought to you each week at the same time by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the Council for Democracy, a national organization dedicated to the propagation of an American faith in democracy. Next week, Rex Stout will bring Herbert Agar to the microphone. A copy of the script of this broadcast will be mailed free to anyone requesting it. Please address your letter or card to the Council for Democracy, 285 Madison Avenue, New York City. May I repeat that? Address your letter or card to the Council for Democracy, 285 Madison Avenue, New York City.